are continuing our conversations about COVID-19 locally. Today, we're going to talk to Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital. Thanks, you guys, for being with us. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Dr. Stacy Hall. I'm an internal medicine physician here at the clinic.
Hi, my name is Dan Suler. I am a family physician at Grand Itasca. I'm also the Vice President of Medical Affairs. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. So let's talk about how Grand Itasca has prepared, is preparing for an influx of COVID-19.
Yeah, it's a great question. So we've been preparing now for the last couple of weeks as, you know, the news of the virus has been coming overseas and heading our way. We've been taking this time to reevaluate our processes and workflows within our building. Examples would be in our clinic. We are screening our patients when they call in and when they come to the door so that we can separate patients. If they're having symptoms consistent with COVID, we'll place them in one waiting room. And if you are not having symptoms consistent with COVID, we'll place you in a different waiting room so we don't have commingling of patients with fevers, cough, et cetera. We've been minimizing visitors at our facility fairly significantly over the last couple of weeks, which has been a big change as far as our patients are used to, but it, again, is in hopes to minimize the number of potentially asymptomatic people out there that don't realize they're carrying the virus to come into our facility and infect our employees and our other patients. We've initiated curbside pharmacy pickup, so people don't have to come in the building anymore to get their medications. They can simply wait out in their car, and our staff will run their medications out to them. And then finally, another example is we've canceled all elective procedures, and this is going to be through at least till the end of April. And the reason behind that is to allow us to save our personal protective equipment that is normally used during those procedures so we can use those to care for our sick patients. It also helps reduce our chance, once again, of our employees from contracting COVID from a patient who may have the virus but is asymptomatic.
So if we start to see a lot of cases in Itasca County, how many can you handle if it becomes too much? What then?
That's a great question. So we've been developing different phases of surge planning. And right now we're, you know, under our business as usual phase where we can take care of patients like we normally could before. We are partnering with Duluth, both at St. Luke's and Essentia, to transfer patients that need a higher level of care like we had previously. We're also part of the Fairview system, and so we're lucky enough to be a part of that system because they've repurposed one of their hospitals in the Twin Cities, Bethesda Hospital, to be a COVID hospital. So all patients at that hospital have COVID. And so, you know, the next stage of the surge, if that were to come, we would be transitioning and transferring patients to those higher levels of care, either in Duluth or down in the Twin Cities. Finally, the third stage that we've been working on is what happens in the scenario that those hospitals are unable to care for any more patients. And we're working on, you know, retraining and repurposing our staff here to take care of a higher level of patient than we historically have.
I think a lot of people are nervous because of what they're hearing in the media. If they have symptoms, can they even get tests? I just wonder if you could answer a few of those kind of fears on what they should be doing and if they should be calling their doctors.
Yeah, that's a great question that we also hear quite a bit. And this really hasn't changed over the last couple of weeks in Minnesota. Testing is determined by the Department of Health, and the criteria for testing is determined by the Department of Health. So right now, the criteria that needs to be met is you have to have symptoms of COVID-19, which includes fever, shortness of breath, or cough. And you have to fall within a couple of different buckets of patient types. So one patient would be somebody who's sick enough to be admitted. Another bucket would be healthcare workers, so we can segregate those out and not have them seeing patients. Folks that live in long-term care facilities, so nursing homes and assisted livings, are also qualified to be tested in Minnesota. And some of the fear and confusion is every state is different. So some states are testing folks that don't have symptoms. But Minnesota, again, we have this rigid guideline as far as who can and who can't be tested.
So if someone does have the symptoms, what's the best thing for them to do if they're not too severe?
Yeah, so if they're having mild symptoms, you know, mild cough, a mild fever, mild shortness of breath, the recommendation is to stay at home. COVID-19 does not have any treatment. So coming to the hospital, coming to see your doctor, we don't have anything to offer. So we recommend people stay at home, isolate themselves from others in their homes, and let the virus ride itself out. For a vast majority of patients, they'll either have no symptoms or very mild symptoms, and they can manage just fine at home. If that person feels that their symptoms are bad enough that they should be seen, we are definitely encouraging them to come into the clinic or the emergency department to be evaluated. You know, we do know that 10 to 50% of patients will need to be in the hospital. So, you know, we're trying to find that balance of people who have mild symptoms can certainly stay at home. We don't want them coming in, getting others sick. But we also want to make sure if you feel that you are not comfortable with how severe your symptoms are, we are open and ready to see you.
What if I'm someone who hasn't been to Grand Itasca before? I'm out of network. How would you be able to treat me?
You know, that's a great question. So right now, the government and private payers are waiving all fees associated with testing of COVID-19. An area that doesn't have an answer to that is if you test positive and are sick enough to be in the hospital and you're out of network, what does that look like? So it's a great question, and I wish I could give you an answer right now. We certainly will take care of you, whether you're in network or out of network. That's not at the top of our list in regards to importance. You know, our patients, we have patients all the time that come in for fractures or stroke symptoms or other healthcare needs that may be out of network. And, you know, we still have our financial advisors that can certainly help patients go through the paperwork and the process of applying for charity care or emergency care or whatever else they may be eligible for to cover that hospitalization. I think there's going to be more to come as far as payers go to cover out-of-network costs, but as we sit today, that's not the case.
So how have things changed for you as a staff at the hospital? How are you guys staying calm and safe?
Yeah, Heidi, I'm going to go ahead and answer this one. So we've had a lot of changes here. In fact, most of our day-to-day life is very different than it was 3 weeks ago. Some of the things that, you know, Dan has alluded to with the changes in the clinic overall have affected us as employees. We're seeing patients very differently than we did before. The majority of our visits have now become virtual visits, so patients who still need care but are trying to avoid being in public, and we're trying to minimize activity here at the clinic, we're doing those over the computer or the phone. As far as minimizing anxiety and trying to stay kind of on top of everything, we've had a really good response from our administration, and we're getting regular updates on what's happening, which I think has been very helpful. So we have regular noontime meetings that update us on everything, and then we also have a lot of resources both locally and through the Fairview system on helping with anxiety management and stuff like that for different workers who are here.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, again, through watching national media, are worried about the people in our lives that are in healthcare or our friends and neighbors, too, because you guys really are on the front lines.
Yeah, so that's definitely, I think, something that's on everyone's mind around here, that we're aware of it. And one of the things that, again, helps is that we have a lot of good preparation for it. All of us in healthcare and everyone who works at the clinic regularly, you know, is educated on how to use things like personal protective equipment. We try to follow the rules as best we can that are being put out there for everybody else, including things like social distancing here at work. There's been changes in the building to try to minimize the exposure that people have had to each other as employees and also to the patients. So some of our units that are regularly dealing with patients who have symptoms are now wearing their personal protective equipment basically the whole day. And will, I imagine, continue to do some of that as we see more numbers increase. One of the things as a healthcare worker that, you know, we always have to kind of remember is this is kind of what we have gotten into the business to do. And although it can be kind of scary, again, we're all prepared for it and we're well trained to be able to manage, you know, the exposure risk that's out there. And as long as we follow, you know, kind of what we've been taught to do, the majority of people will be very safe through all of this.
Yeah, if I think I've already asked you this, but I think it bears repeating. If someone has COVID-19 and stays home and quarantines, most people are going to be okay. Is that correct?
That is correct. When we've looked at all the data that's out there, you know, the large majority of people, somewhere in the ballpark of 80%, are either asymptomatic with with no symptoms at all or have very minimal symptoms, kind of consistent with an upper respiratory infection. And the big concern that's out there is trying to protect the populations that are at higher risk and kind of prevent any further spread of the virus.
So even though there is a lower risk, that doesn't mean we shouldn't all be practicing the social distancing. The CDC over the weekend said we should be wearing masks if we're going into grocery stores to protect other people. Would you agree with that too, that people should be wearing those when they do go into public places?
I think with them making that recommendation, I think it is definitely something for people to think about. Again, they have said it's not mandatory to do it, but I do think that they obviously have enough evidence that it's going to provide additional protection or that they wouldn't necessarily recommend doing it. The one thing that has been kind of emphasized with all of it is to try to use masks that are either homemade masks or the level of mask that's not used by healthcare providers. So the specific masks that we use here, such as things like N95 masks and surgical masks, they're trying to dissuade people from using those just so that we keep the supply available for the healthcare workers. But things like homemade masks, there's actually quite a few places out there that have come out with instructions, including on our own website, on how to make those. And there's a lot of organizations that are trying to provide them both to healthcare providers and the public.
What can the community do to help Grande Tasca right now?
So there's a lot of things that can be done. I think first and foremost is the recommendation to stay home, try to avoid crowds, use the recommendations for social distancing, keeping your 6-foot distance from people around you. That's probably the best thing that can happen because the less we spread it to people around us, the slower the surge that we will see here at the clinic and at other hospitals will be. And that is probably one of the best things they can do to support the providers here. The other thing that, you know, we've kind of been dealing with some different businesses and individuals on is just different donations. And we actually have some information on our website on what to do with donations and which kind of donations we can use. And we've seen everything from local businesses supporting us by providing food up to businesses that are kind of unusual businesses stepping forward and providing some of our protective equipment. You know, we can definitely get you the information for where to find that sheet on donations, but there's a instructions for where to drop them off, and then there's also some contact information on there. And so there's a whole range of different things. We've got groups in the community who are making masks, like I talked about, the homemade masks. We also have individuals who might have previously bought some of the different masks or the different supplies that we now are running short on that have donated their personal, you know, supplies that they have at home. And so there's a lot of different ways for people to kind of step forward and help. And, of course, that's one of the most important things when we have anything like this happening is that we do have a strong community response, and we're very grateful for all that.
Is there anything else you want the community to know, either of you?
You know, I would just echo Stacy and say we've been floored by the support we've had throughout the community, whether it's restaurants, you know, asking what kind of food they can bring in. Last week we had a place in town that brought protein shakes for us. You know, the different places that we're getting PPE from, gloves, masks, are unbelievable, places I never even expected that would have this type of equipment, whether it's nail salons or construction companies. So again, you know, we're doing well, we're planning well. I think we're pretty well prepared for this, and the community's been just outstanding with not only the stay-at-home order, but the outpouring of support to us, and we definitely feel it and appreciate it.
The website Stacy was talking about, you can go to grandeitasca.org to find more information on what they are looking for. I appreciate talking to you guys today as we start to hear the national conversation begin to be about rural and small hospitals and to know the plans that you have in place to keep people safe here. Thanks a lot for all you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. All right, take care.
Thank you.
Dr. Stacy Hull and Dr. Dan Sular from Grande Tasca Clinic and Hospital. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for tuning in to member-supported KAXE KBXE.